Welcome to Paradigm Shifters. Paradigm shifting is actually an art. It's an old art as well as a modern art. And I have an author with us today, somebody I'm very fond of anyway, who edited my book, but she's a brilliant writer and a wonderful editor and a strong metaphysician with great consciousness. And her book, called Spellweaver, is, I believe, partly fiction and partly memory of other lives, and talk about paradigm shifting. That's happened hundreds of years ago as well as now. And this is your vignette that's going to take you into that. So welcome to the show, Ann Crawford.
Thank you. It's such a pleasure to be here.
Oh, it's wonderful to have you here. And also, I love your book, Spellweaver. Some of your other writings have been pretty interesting to me as well, but I just completed Spellweaver and I'm just blown away. It's absolutely wonderful. What got you going on writing Spellweaver? Did you have memories, past life memories?
I did. And because of the topic of this book, it's during the witch burnings, during the burning times. It was challenging to write this, and there were times when I did not want to write it, but it wouldn't leave me alone. I would start and then leave it alone, and then it would be tapping me on the shoulder in my dream time saying, hey, come write me. And then one time, my oldest sister and I were driving down a rural street in Kansas, a little off the beaten track, and she started telling me about a past life that she remembered where she was a younger sister and she couldn't help me somehow. And she would meet that person in her dream time, and she assured her that she had taken really good care of me in this lifetime. So I promptly burst into tears and pulled over to the side of the road, and I said, you're not going to believe this book I'm writing about. It's about a woman who is burned, and she has a younger sister who can't talk. And we just were sobbing by the side of the road, both of us remembering being sisters in this past life, remembering the other side of the story. It was amazing.
And you know, it's interesting, and you said this at the end of the book as well, that it doesn't matter if those past life memories or experiences are absolutely true. What matters is the emotional reality that they leave in us, that we share in those. Is that right?
Right. And also, if it wasn't exactly that, it might have been something along those lines. But the memories are alive in us, nevertheless.
Mm-hmm. So it's also the comprehension of that kind of, destruction of evolving beings or people of spirit. It's amazing.
Right.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And Catriona, the heroine of the book, I'm just starting to scratch the surface of what she came into her life knowing and being aware of. And you were the one, remember when I once asked you, I said, aren't our lives supposed to be a progression? And you said, they're not exactly always linear.
Thank heaven, or we'd be really mixed up, wouldn't we? Right?
Right.
Tell us before we get very far into, which I want to do, into some of the aspects and some of the philosophy in your book. Is it philosophy or is it spiritual truth? I think we'll call it that. Tell us who you are, Anne.
Well, I am a writer, a mystic, a filmmaker. Presently, I live in Colorado, looking out at the Rocky Mountains right now. Scuba diver, all kinds of things. I have a few other books, and my movie, actually, I'm an award-winning documentary filmmaker. My first movie, I went to Vietnam with a group of vets, and I filmed them going back to where they'd been stationed and doing humanitarian work to give something back to the country of Vietnam. And that was one of the honors of my lifetime, to be with these men as they embraced their former enemies physically and their demons emotionally, and healed their wounds of war. And that movie won a very prestigious award. And there's a link to it. You can watch the whole thing on my website, which is annecrawford.net. And there's no E on Anne. And that's a funny story if you want to.
Well, hang on a sec. I want to talk a bit more about the movie. What year did you create that?
I went to Vietnam in 94, and the movie was done in 95, so it was a while ago now. But
it was also a bit of time between the Vietnam War, and you say you had time to digest some of what had gone on, right?
Right, right. Mm-hmm. And the guys, the vets that I went with, were on massive amounts of medication. They had really bad PTSD, and this trip really helped heal a lot of that for a number of them.
Wow, really? I mean, it just sort of unhooked them from... See, that's an interesting discussion right there. Did it unhook them from sort of underlying anxiety or fear or guilt?
Yes.
Or what would you say?
Well, for one of them, we went to a village where he'd been stationed, and the entire village came out to meet us. And one of the guys who had been shooting across from him had been shooting at his platoon. They just hugged in the middle of the street. I mean, what healing and forgiveness that was. It was so amazing.
Wow.
And then another fellow was walking down the street near the Mekong Delta in Kanto, and he heard, he was from Hawaii, and his call signal was Papa P. Papa Pineapple. We won't go into that, but that's what it was. Somebody called out, Papa P, Papa P, you came back. I knew you'd come back. And they were, and as he says in the movie, they just hugged each other, they cried, and 20 years of guilt just dissolved, evaporated. And he was on something like 33 daily meds.
Oh my gosh.
And after trip, he was down to about two or something.
Oh, and so what you're saying is the people there, whether they're whichever side they were on, there was still kind of a union, appreciation of one another.
Yes, absolutely.
Wow. How long was your time there?
A month, just a month.
And you're actually a filmmaker, are you?
Yes. Well, I made another movie, and that came, and I have a link to that on my website, too. That came out in 2003.
And what's that one about?
Well, my former spouse and I, my ex-husband, and I traveled the world and interviewed people from all walks of life about how we could make world peace. So we talked to royalty and street kids, just people from the whole cross-section of life, and ask them how we can make peace.
Oh.
It was such an incredible journey.
And is that also available?
Yeah, there's a link to the trailer on my website and more information there.
Wonderful.
Yeah.
And first of all, did you come from a metaphysical background? Did you come from a family that was very astute about, philosophical, the meaning of life, of metaphysics or whatever?
Well, that's a great question. They were in their own way. My parents were very intellectual, and I was raised Catholic, and I'm very grateful for that because it gave me a strong appreciation for religion and a closeness with Yeshua and Mary Magdalene, and I wrote about them in another book, too. My mother wanted to be a nun, and my dad talked her out of it. Otherwise, we would be... out with these zingers every now and then and talk about things that a Catholic woman would not talk about, like that there's a convening session between lives. Like, what?
Your mom talked about that?
Yeah.
Wow.
She talked about reincarnation and just, it was interesting. And then when I was in my early 20s, that's when I started on a metaphysical spiritual path.
How old were you when your mom passed? She passed when you were young, right?
17. Yeah, mm-hmm. She was very sick.
And that would have had a huge impact on you as well.
Sure. Yeah.
Was she, this is relevant to your book as well. Was your mom conscious of her pending passing and how she was an ongoing presence in your life anyway?
I think she was. Well, she was. She certainly knew she was going to die, and she has certainly shown up in my life since then, whispering things and just having more interesting conversations with me and stuff. So when I have that in the book, that's definitely firsthand experience in this life.
Wow. And so let's jump into the book. Your life has been very interesting. And I want to back up here and say, well, I guess we're all sort of set up for bringing our particular perceptions into life, aren't we, by our childhood, eh?
Yes, absolutely.
And your father, is he metaphysical? And he lasted after your mom passed, did he not?
He's interesting. He worked for IBM and was very instrumental in the computer industry. He was the architect of the Sabre system, which runs all the motels, hotels, rent-a-cars. That computer system that is behind all that entire reservation system was designed by him. And IBM, it made IBM billions of dollars. They got a trip to Europe out of that
Oh,
in
wow.
1960, and that's where they decided to have one more child. So if it weren't for the Sabre system, I wouldn't be here.
Ah.
But
Isn't that
he
funny?
also drank. He was an alcoholic. And in 1984, he stopped drinking, but he didn't change that much. And then in 1987, he called me and asked, "Have you ever heard of Deepak Chopra?" And I almost dropped the phone.
Ah.
I literally looked at the phone in my hand and said, "Dad?" So that changed everything. I started giving him books like Thich Nhat Hanh's Being Peace. He carried that book with him every day for the rest of his life. He died in 2006.
Wow. So
And
you.
he was very into Jack Kornfield and the whole, I mean, he became very metaphysical, very spiritual.
Well, I would suggest that's probably in his soul anyway.
Yeah.
So let's get to the book. This book is, you know what I found, Anne, when I was reading it? I found it's pretty good allegory or metaphorically aligned with what's going on in the world right now. Thank you very much, even though it's about the burning years, right?
I knew there was a perfect timing to when it would come out and why it took me so long to write it. I wrote three other books in the meantime while I was still working on this one.
It's a really wonderful book. I think what's really wonderful for me, and I was touched, I kind of wept as I read some parts of it, are those incredible nuggets of understanding our soul's journey and how it isn't logical and it isn't linear. And the learning is, what would you say, is like 90% of the job, no matter what your circumstances, right?
Right. Catriona was very awake and aware, but she lived in a village of less than 100 people. So what she had in those days was very wise. And in these days, you know, she'd be on TV and have a totally different audience.
But also the way you talked about the witch hunts and the various beings who arrived in the villages in order to kill off people who were breaking free, anybody who was awakening or breaking free and becoming healers and that sort of thing. Awakening has always terrified people, hasn't it?
Absolutely, yes. And it was also competition to the church. If people knew they had the power within themselves to heal, and both physically and emotionally, then what need would we have of a church? So the people of the church were adamant about putting these women and men too down, away, snuff out their life.
Sometimes the murdering was done in the name of God, right?
Yes, which is ludicrous.
It's happening right now, right?
Yeah,
We've got
true.
some
Still
incredible,
ludicrous.
We have some incredible dominance going on in the name of Jesus. And you do talk in the book about how Jesus kind of rolls his eyes, or I don't remember the phrase you used, but it was quite appropriate about, like, are you kidding me in my
name?
It's
all about love. Why are you killing people in my name? My goodness.
Yeah, and because of good marketing, it works, right?
Right. Right.
So why don't you give people a thumbnail about the book, and I'll intrude as I am wont to do.
Well, the memories came long before the book did. I remember those days. Probably since I was a teenager, I've had flashbacks. And so I started working on it. And as you know, it took maybe more than a dozen years from start to finish. And when it wouldn't leave me alone, when I tried to not do it, and it would come tap me on the shoulder saying, hey, all these characters would be talking in my ear saying, you've got to write me. We're not going away. So I finally, over the last year of writing it, I just sat down for 20 minutes a day and just finished it. And I wrote the hard part, the actual burning scene. I just made that a very small section of the book, just a few pages. And I got that out of the way so that I could concentrate on what it really is, a love story between a man and a woman, between two sisters, between a woman and her village, between a woman and life. And that's really what it's about. It's how much she just loved life.
And how she knew the strength and courage to love in the moment, no matter what atrocities were being performed around her, right?
Right.
I was commending, like, wow, that takes a terrific amount of courage to allow that, that keeps
right.
Like an organized, a meditative brain, I suppose, eh?
Mm-hmm. And very awake and knowing that there's really nowhere to go after this. We're still somewhere. We're still here. We're still love and form somewhere in the universe.
Well, I want to drop a little teeny vignette that came up in one of my past life retrospective visions, which was being burned at the stake. And I remember being corralled, and there were three of us, and we were at the stake. And just, and I'll never forget the phrase, because it's politically incorrect these days, but as they lit the faggots, you know, which is the pieces of wood, right?
Right.
Three of us looked at each other and laughed and popped out of our bodies and held hands, and we floated in a circle above the fire, kind of going da 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 da. And
great.
Then we moved on. So there was a certain intersection between your book and your wonderful writing and my memory of that, you know.
That's great.
It is great. It's part of the same picture in a way, isn't it?
Right.
But she had a mission, this girl. She had a huge mission. Catriona, is that how you say her name, Catriona?
Yes. And I wanted to change her name because Outlander, the star of that, her name is Catriona, and I wanted to change the name. But Catriona came to me and said, hey, I had the name first before you knew about this other one. Oh, that's my name, so I kept it.
I love that. Did you ever look up the meaning of the name or the letters?
Well, it's Catherine, so it means something like queenly or something like that. I'm not remembering clearly right now.
It seems very appropriate. It just seems it's a wonderful name. But also the fact that she was, all right, talk about her a little bit, because to me, she was born that way. I really think that's a vivid, touching aspect as well.
Right. I think Yeshua was born that way. I think a lot of people are, but so many of us get it snuffed out in this 3D realm that we're in. What do you mean you see people over there? There's no one over there. You know this. You're an intuitive. You see dead people all the time. So I think a lot of us come in with it and then get it snuffed out and then spend a long time getting it to reemerge. And she really didn't have to do it that way, like some, like you did, like I did.
But
So, yeah.
also, it's funny, the bonding, I felt like the way you explained spirituality in terms of the bonding with the father who was drunk and the sister who couldn't speak, right?
Right.
Whose mother died in childbirth. The bonding just seemed to me to be just radiantly purifying, meaning it happens because what? Because they had to be set like that so they weren't all attached to the status quo, that sort of thing.
Right, right. Well, and you know, you can hear in my story that a lot of this is autobiographical still in this lifetime too, but the love is always there. It's always there. I had a death experience once, and where I felt like I was being swooped up, not a technical term I understand, but I was whooshed up in this vortex of love. It was all around me, and I felt souls being whooshed up and just in this love, this palpable love that is what life is made of, but we're so taught to forget that. But she never forgot that. She had that with everyone, her family, all the people, even the witch hunter.
I want to ask you this. Do you think that we've all forgotten it, or do you think that is an experience that comes up because you're primed and ready now to accept it? Or is there an answer?
I think children come in naturally. Many come in naturally loving and giving, and life kind of knocks it out of them. Parent, teacher, minister, as a spiritual teacher of mine says, I mean, these powerful beings who live in their own fear because they were taught fear by the people who raised them, they don't know, they didn't know how to live in love. So more kids are born into that, and it's there. It just needs to be untapped. And so many of us, luckily these days, can get into that untapping mode and reveal who we really are.
What helped you to get into it? Because I know that you're very loving.
Well, I've always been loving, but in fact, my mother would say that to me very often. You have so much love to give, which was a beautiful thing that she, it was one of the biggest gifts she gave to me. I think having her leave when I was so young, and she was always sick, so it was always like she was about to leave. So it's kind of like she wasn't there, even though she was. And then my dad's sobriety when I was about 23. That's what really got me started, was when my sisters and I went to the family program at the rehab where he went, and that's what started my awakening. And then I took a Reiki class from Nikki Scully, who's
pretty famous woman.
Yeah, she was my first metaphysical teacher way back when. When I felt this energy streaming out of my hands, I just said, there is so much more to us than we've been thinking.
That's beautiful. Well, your book includes that. There are pages where the energy coming out of the book is very, I recommend to listeners to take a load out of this book and really feel your own light move. Wonderful. So that tells me that anything, and I've always been fascinated by this, Anne, is anything published that has already had the light in it, doesn't matter how many publishers it goes through, still has it. I have found that so remarkable. I used to buy books that way. I would go to the bookstore and open the book and hold it against my body, and if it had light, I would buy it.
That's beautiful.
Yeah,
that's
it beautiful. Is, and it's, you've got it.
I just created a meme yesterday that I'm going to post on my Facebook page, my author page, and it says, "Ever have a book light up your life?" And the book is shining light.
That's great. Is it a different book?
No, it's it that's just a book for all, just a symbol of all of my books, all of the books of light, really.
That's wonderful, isn't it? Okay, so
Yeah.
now we've got Catriona, and she's in a tight situation with a father who is drunk in his misery, right? In a
Right.
small town in Scotland, 150 years ago, would you say? How long ago?
No, it was 1597, so it was quite a while. It was about 120 years before the witch burning stopped. That was another thing. I was traveling through Scotland for one of my movies in the late 90s, and I completely remembered those hills and the scenery, and that helped bring the whole story back too, was being there.
Oh, wonderful. Are you Scottish by heritage?
Crawford is a Scottish name.
So you're Scottish by heritage and by soul-age. Is there such a thing? And let me see. So in the metaphysics, I said it was kind of parallel to what's going on in the world today. But
Right.
in the name of Jesus or the name of God, we've got so much abuse going on. I heard an analysis on the radio the other day of how many ways, like we were talking about ISIS and how afraid we are. And then this fellow went through the entire history of Christianity and how much murder it has perpetrated on the planet.
Right,
And this
and
wasn't a religious channel, you know?
right. And so many stories, speaking of ISIS, were borrowed from the Egyptians and the pagans to become Christianity, like the Easter rabbit and ISIS, and I mean the mother and son. I mean, a lot of Christianity is borrowed.
Well, yeah, it's but what amazes me is how the power issues are control and fear, which you've already mentioned. And in the book, it
Right.
is just so clear. I'm going, ah, I'm watching the takeover by our leadership these days and the
Right.
international consorting over who gets the most power and how little it cares about people and love, right?
Right.
And
Right.
but in your book, there's that amazing consciousness of love in some people who are born with
Right.
that, right?
And that will never be killed off, and we'll keep rising, and we'll keep loving this place up. I mean, the fear and the domination and the control won't win in the long run.
I liked her Catrione's intense staying power, knowing that she was going to meet a completing relationship and that quality was out there and so on. And she just held herself back until that would show up, right?
Right.
And that's a really deep faith.
Yeah, he did. And that was fun to write. That's
Well,
my
also,
favorite to write about is love stories.
I'm afraid to talk about it because I don't want anybody's enjoyment of this to be spoiled. So I'm not going to
Nope.
say what I wanted to say. But
Okay.
in terms of metaphysics, it's the most beautifully, or in terms of what the soul's journey, it's a beautifully written allegory that I really loved. Like, for example, talking about how basically talking about something I read recently, which is that we're living on a planet of war. And you didn't say it in those words, but you wrote it in a way, I can't remember the line now. I probably have it outlined, but it's this is a place of really of the challenge of struggle, right?
Right.
And the
It's such,
challenge of domination. Right.
right. It's such a dichotomy of light and dark.
But what do you say is the purpose? Because you did write about that.
Tempering of the soul. I mean, if when you want to shine a diamond, you use a lot of friction. And so these teachings that we come across in our lives lift us up and make us stronger than who we thought we would be otherwise. That's
That's
a big part of it.
That's true, and maybe we don't really reap the benefits till we get off. I think about the people in the Vietnam War that you went to Vietnam with, and I'm going, wow. And there's stories about people whose families were all killed in front of them in Auschwitz and so on, that they became very strong spiritual teachers.
Right.
You know, it's
And
that transformative.
two of the women I know who had the most horrific childhoods, ritual abuse, satanic cult kind of stuff, were the most, are the most, some of the most powerful healers and teachers and counselors that I know. And
Wow.
nobody should have to go through anything like that, but it, I mean, they became just amazing beings from having gone through that.
Do you think it's from punishment? Do you think we're being punished as souls?
You mean in like in terms of karma?
Yeah, like why
And
would you? Yeah, let's talk about karma.
well, I mean, to some degree, but I do believe that once you're aware of it, you can change your karma. That time and life is the future are all fluid and they're always in motion and they can be changed. I don't believe in fate or that there's something fixed that has to stay. I think if people are asleep, they might go through something that they inflicted in another time and place.
So you're
And
saying
then
that
I.
waking up can move you out of karma?
Yes, I believe that, yes.
My guides have been saying lately that we, because the frequencies on the planet and the frequencies in the universes are increasing, and we have brand new downloads that are coming, they're saying that we can literally step out consciously. We can literally step out of the whole karmic wheel. What do you think of that?
I believe that. I think you can also step out of the body in one moment, one instant, when you want to, when your journey is complete here.
Yeah, I believe that too. I often chuckle and say, well, I'd like to phone you and say, Anne, I'm about to leave. So it's really been fun. Bye. And then
I would understand completely. All right, I'll see
pop.
you on the other side.
I'll catch you out on cloud number nine.
I will meet you there.
So let's go back into your story because it just is a really wonderful tour through all of that kind of stuff, isn't it?
Yes, thank you.
And what about Byron? What about what do you know about him and the nature of the male? Let me see. I think I was thinking more about the male archetype as I saw the various male figures in there in the
Right.
presentation.
He was also awake and aware and a strong, strong person to match Catriona's strength.
And he was
He,
radiant as well, wasn't he?
yeah, and he knew. Well, I don't want to give it away either.
I don't either, but I kept thinking about the male archetype, which I think is floundering in a state of, in a chrysalis state of almost transformation now. I'm
Right,
not sure how you
right.
see it, but I'm musing here.
Yeah, no, there are a lot of awake men. I mean, I'm married to one. Who are completely for love and strength. And the way I describe Yeshua in my other book was like velvet and rock, like soft and strong. And that's what these men are like these days, the awake ones.
And he wouldn't be a control. I often think he said, anything I can do, you can do better. He didn't say I'm the only one.
Right, no.
No, he just said I can lead the way. But we don't hear that so much. But I really
Right.
think that that's where we stop controlling and dividing and conquering, and when we really get that inside.
Right. Yeshua, Jesus said, you know, I'm not the only one who can do this. Come with me and I'll show you how. That's what he said. And Mary Magdalene was just as strong as he was. That's another thing my mother said. One day in church, we were sitting in the back of the church, Catholic service, and she was telling me about Mary Magdalene and how the church said she was a prostitute. And I remember thinking, you know, I was all of 7 or 8. No, she was not.
Good for you.
And my mom was just talking about her in such loving terms. It's very unusual for a woman who was going to be a nun.
Well, I don't know, because people are people. You know what I mean? It's like, what kind of women become nuns? Probably all kinds of women, right?
Oh, that's true. Some of the nuns I've met are very cool.
I mean, did you go to Catholic school?
No, I went to catechism, but I did know a lot. So I knew a lot of nuns as I was growing up. And the nuns I've met in recent years are just dynamic, powerful women, mm-hmm. actually.
Hugely activists, too, some of them.
Yeah.
Yeah, I know. Isn't that interesting? Because, like, talking about nuns, that's really interesting to me, is just the same as in the patriarchy, just the same as in political control, some of them have to have an interpretation that separates people.
Right.
And some of them have the consciousness to radiate love and acceptance of all. It's very interesting, isn't it? That's the human dilemma, I believe.
Yeah, and they've obviously signed up to do powerful work on the planet, healing and of people and the planet itself. As you said, they're active. Many are activists.
Yeah, I love that. Well, look at Mother Teresa too.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So what was your book about Mary Magdalene like? Is it her? Did you channel it? Is it your relationship to her?
I don't say channeled. I definitely say downloaded. I downloaded it. It came from a bigger place than I am, but I didn't actually channel Mary. She's alive in all of us. I think we can all access that wisdom anytime we want. It's an alternative to what we've heard for 2,000 years. It's another version of the story. So that she and Yeshua were partners, equals, and they were married. A groom wouldn't be concerned with wine unless it was his wedding. That's just one thing. And then the Indians in India believe that Jesus survived the crucifixion and went to live in India afterwards.
I've heard that for a long time. What do you feel about that?
Well, I think that that's a possibility, and that, you know, I don't want to give my book away. I mean, Joseph of Arimathea, you don't need 100 pounds of herbs for a corpse. You would if you were bringing someone back who had been close to the other side, leaving this world for another. And so with their healing herbs, it's possible.
Well, and when you think about how many people are having near-death experiences these days, doesn't that remind you that coming back is very feasible?
Right. Yeah. And also, when someone dies on a cross, it takes days. And what they do is they suffocate and they can't talk. So he was still talking, and they think that perhaps the sponge that was put up to him had an opiate on it to knock him out. And that, I mean, so he could have been taken down before he actually died. So that's totally possible.
I just think of things like bilocation and so on as well.
Right, right.
You know, when she steps out of, when Katriana steps out of her body by choice, right?
Right, right, which she did more than once.
Sure.
Yeah, she taught herself how to do it before the time when she really needed to do it.
I also had a lot of sort of beatings or when I was very small, and I knew how to just take a breath and be out of my body, so I didn't feel it.
Yeah.
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 And I bet you most kids know how to do that.
Yeah. Yeah, that's true.
Yeah. So when I think of Jesus on the cross, or did he go to India? I go there in many, many ways he could have gone.
Right. You true. Know?
And I don't need to decide and make it a religion, but I have great faith, right?
We don't all need to have rock solid answers all the time. It's all fluid. anything can happen at any point. So, yeah.
Did you create this story based on an actual village in Scotland?
No, just one that I saw in my mind a lot. Up in the mountains in the northern area, not far from the sea.
And also, you have an awful lot of information on stone circles, and there's a lot of ritual or herbal information in your book. And that's yours, isn't it?
Well, I have some dear friends who are very into ritual, and I did ask some help about writing that. And things like how a village would have celebrated something like Beltane. I didn't want to be totally off the wall. So I did do some research, and I'm lucky to have friends who know all about this. And you know a lot about healing and how to heal the body with hands and certain herbs. So you're in there too.
Thank you. Well, I loved all that part because this is a very short book. But I'll tell you what, it's deep and it's lively and it's just got so much information. That's what I'm trying to tell listeners, that wow, you could take a real wild ride in there in superficial and the lovely romance and the depth and the amazing healing abilities and the multidimensionality. My goodness, you did a lot. No, it's wonderful. Where was I going to go with all that? How she handles knowing. I've already sort of touched on this, but how we handle knowing. If we know something is not going to work out, we don't usually go through it with the same kind of ease, do we?
No. She came in knowing that it was not a long journey that she was going to have that time, and just decided to make the most of it while she was here then.
But then we go back to the talking about Yeshua, and I go, well, he knew it was going to be truncated at some point, right?
Right.
So I feel it's kind of a similar thing. He knew that he was there to go through that passage, however that really meant. You know,
right?
You know what I'm saying? And he did it for that reason, right?
Yeah, it's like these two beings of incredible light and love and power were just here for a little bit of time and really blasted it out as well as they could. Yeshua, my goodness, if he were here these days. I mean, there's that great line in Jesus Christ Superstar that Israel in 4 BC didn't have mass communication. Just think what he could do now. And
well, he does have mass communication.
What's that?
He does have mass communication. A lot of people have seen him, you know.
That's true. Yeah. He came to a friend of mine who then informed his people that he said, "I fed 5,000. Just imagine what you can do now." And go do it.
And go do it. Yeah.
Right.
Oh, that's wonderful. I think that's so wonderful. I have seen him too. He's just arrived and stood there in various circumstances. And other people I know have. And when we talk about the second coming, I'm going, it's coming through people, isn't it?
Yeah, he's already here.
Yeah. It's the Christing or the Christ consciousness. These and more shall you do in the name of the Father. Sounds like I'm preaching. I don't mean to be. I'm just saying those are some of the Christian teachings that we aren't hearing enough about.
Right. He came to me right before I met my husband. And that's an amazing story. Oh, my goodness. My husband wrote a list of 40 things that he wanted in his next and last wife, me.
Mm-hmm.
And he was specific. It was one third physical, one third emotional, and one third intellectual. And he said someone at peace with her world, someone with long, long legs. He didn't just say long legs. I have a 36 Didn't seem. He wanted someone between 5'10 and 6 feet. I'm 5'11. His list, and I was everything on that list. And the last thing on that list was she has her own list, and I meet all of her criteria. And I did, and he does. I had things like spiritual powerhouse and big and built, family man and stuff like that. And so we just thought so much of how we just called each other in from these lists we wrote. And we met on eHarmony in 2006. On June 21st, we were matched. We met face-to-face on July 14th, and we were engaged on July 16th. And 5 days later, I was in my little Prius moving from California to Kansas. it worked. We called each other. And so that was the basis of the story, Angels on Overtime.
Oh, tell us about Angels on Overtime. That's a wonderful story as well.
Well, that's a romantic comedy. And it's really based on when we thought of how in the world we would, how we called each other in. There must have been angels at a computer. Who meets all these things? Well, there's a woman in California, but she's married. Oh, well, that's not going to work. Well, how married is she? At the time he was writing that list, my former husband and I were kind of unraveling our marriage. It was it's just amazing how that happened. So I wrote this story to be just fun and funny and uplifting.
Was that before you met your husband?
No, it was after. It's basically our story. I haven't met the angels who surround. The book is based on the premise that every human has a team of angels, but then, and I'm not going to give it away, but then, like, who's training who? The humans are angels.
I love that. But you know what I'm thinking, having read that as well, Angels in the Outfield and Spellweaver, I'm going, both of them are so permeated with the consciousness of the cellular consciousness and that
right.
huge
it's
infinite.
Not I'm not Angels in the Outfield. That's another great.
Sorry.
No problem.
Yeah, that's funny. But anyway, there's a lot of metaphysical information in them. Both these books are a little fictionalized, right?
Right, totally. Yeah.
But they're wonderful, entertaining stories that can teach metaphysics in great ways.
Right. Well, thank you. Yeah, that was the intent behind them.
And I have to tell you, with Spellweaver, I wept. I really, and I encourage everybody at home, I appreciate it when I weep in a book. You know, it means I'm being taken right in, you know, to experience, to vicariously, or to live in that moment with those beings, with those wonderful beings as they connect.
Thank you. I'm so honored to hear that.
And also the compassion that this woman feels for the evildoers, if you will. She has such understanding that those souls will also be welcomed to heaven. It isn't the way we were taught as kids, is it?
Right. No, they have their own stories of how they ended up the way they did. And it's just amazing how, one time, I think it was Neil Donald Walsh has the premise that Hitler's in heaven.
Oh, really?
And because at the soul level, we're all divine beings of love. So that is where he would go. On the other hand, though, I read a wonderful book once about two nuns. Speaking of nuns again, they had a telepathic relationship. And after one died, that relationship continued. And the one who died said that she was sort of helping souls reconcile what they had done. And she met a guard from Auschwitz or one of the concentration camps who could not look at himself. And he, in the etheric realm, he was just curled up in the fetal position and unable to do anything. Mm-hmm. So perhaps they're all true at different levels, that at the highest level, Hitler's in heaven as the divine being that his soul is underneath all that other horrific.
Well, I also heard this, that Hitler served the planet by making a lot of people make decisions about being better people. You know, and that's kind of interesting. The other thing is, I see a lot of people on the other side, which I'm sure you do too, but I find it if they die in a state of self-hatred, misery, or shame or judgment, they kind of roll around in that for quite a long time. Somehow there has to be an extricating of oneself from that. Does that make sense? And I don't know everything that's true. I just say what I see or what I experience.
Right. Yeah, I would go along with that. There's so many levels to living. Things can be happening to the same person at a number of different levels.
I think if it's, I agree with you, but this whole planet is right now seething with turmoil. And I think we're having to realize that, oh, I don't know what we're realizing. I should think that it's about recognizing the light or the beingness in one another and the right to be here.
Right. I keep hearing from a number of people that Trump is actually a channel for change, that it's actually not a bad thing that he got where he is, and that good will come from this.
Well, I hope that's right. I feel that he is. I mean, what does the word Trump mean? We know it means trickster, right? And it is kind of a big, colossal game if you look at it that way.
Yeah. Right? Yeah.
And I believe he's shaking us up to think differently and to be different.
And he's not controllable by just to say the cabal or something like that. He's not controllable. They don't know. Nobody knows what he doesn't know what he's going to do next. So there's no specific pathway. And then, you know, then you hear about at the G20, he was off on his own and everybody else is aligning and stuff. So who really knows? But I do believe these seers who say that ultimately this is for good.
Mm-hmm. I do too, because it can never go back.
Right.
It can never go back to the old substructures, right?
Right.
It's very interesting. So tell everybody, first of all, how to order the book. And I wanted to say also, do you think that Trump is being helped by angels on overtime?
I sure hope so. Some even more today. Here, let's go this direction when, you know, he does do some good things every now and again. Like, oh, I didn't see that coming.
Yeah, but, I think he shows some sort of compassion for family life or something, doesn't he?
Yeah.
Or nepotism is another way to put it.
Right.
Anyway, also, I think you have audio. Are these not audio books? We're talking about Spellweaver today mostly, but all of the books, are they audio books?
Yeah, and there's the first book called Visioning, which is How to Manifest. And that I wrote back in 2001 in the middle of making that first movie and then updated it years later. The one audiobook right now is Angels on Overtime, although Mary is about to have an audio version in just a couple of weeks. It's coming out.
And it's called
Oh,
Mary?
My goodness. That's so much fun to do. I had no idea I would enjoy making audiobooks so much.
And how do you do it? You just go to the studio?
Yeah, I have this beautiful being, this audio engineer who's been blind since birth. He has his own fascinating story, and he's my audio engineer. And eventually all the books will be on audio, but they're all at least in back in Kindle right now, and they're all available on Amazon. And my website is anncrawford.net. And I have to tell you why there's no E on Ann.
Okay.
Because I was such a tiny baby.
Oh, you're kidding.
Had a tiny name to match me. And now that I'm almost 6 feet tall, it should have been like Mary Catherine Elizabeth or something.
But I think Anne means
grace.
Oh, grace. All right. That's good. Because you are grace. 6 foot of grace. Yeah, we would say that.
Thank you.
And also sometimes the simpler is more powerful, right?
Yeah. That's true. That's true. I do like the simplicity of it.
What are you going to write next? Is Spellweaver? I guess there's no sequel to that, no possible sequel to it.
Well, my sister thinks I should write the story of her son, so that's a possibility down the line. I mean, I did when she mentioned that, I said, well, that's a good idea. The book I'm working on right now is based on when I was in LA for a year and I was a talent manager working with about 100 actors. It was so much crazy fun. It was to be with all these people. And actors are very spiritual and they have such interesting journeys themselves. And have to pull from this deep well of many different emotions to project what we can believe on the screen and on the stage. So this is another comedy. I had to write a comedy, mostly a comedy. There's a few sad things too, but I had to write something uplifting and lighthearted after Spellweaver.
Now let's jump back to the fellow who's your audio engineer that you said has been blind at birth. How did you find him? Was it through your visioning process?
No, it was a friend of mine recommended him.
Oh,
And he
okay.
never told me that he was blind. I didn't know that until I showed up at his door. And then I asked him, because I'm going to write about him when I launch the audio book for Mary. I asked him if it would be okay to talk about that. And he said, sure, it's part of my story.
Yeah.
It's really, he's an amazing person.
Some people who are blind have more amazing other, not compensations, but they work other aspects of living, don't they?
He
Yeah.
has incredible audio capacities. So,
So when are you going to launch the audio of Mary? Is it called just Mary?
no, it's Mary's Message, the story of Mary Magdalene and Yeshua ben Joseph. Sorry, and that's on Amazon too. This is the 10th. Yeah, it'll be in about 2 weeks that it'll be launched.
Oh, wonderful. And also, do you have a Facebook page for these for your books?
Yeah, it's Ann Crawford Author Speaker Workshop. That doesn't exactly roll off the tongue, but that's what it is.
You don't have a Facebook page for each book, huh?
No, they're all under me.
So people can get hold of your books on Amazon or off your
Right.
site, Ann Crawford.
Yes, and barnesandnoble.com,
And
the end.
Barnes and Noble. Okay, wonderful. Well, Anne, it's been an absolute delight. We went all over the place. We didn't just stick
We
to.
sure did. We
Well,
always, it's so much fun.
and Spellweaver is, when you think of the term Spellweaver, I love
Yeah.
it. It's just like all the ways we're entranced, and that's what we are working our way through is all these different entrancements in your life and
Right.
musings and so on. I love this book and I recommend people at home read it. It's a fast read, but it's a deep read.
Thank you. And I didn't mean to say it's not uplifting. It also, I meant it to be uplifting, despite the subject matter. It's supposed to be inspirational and uplifting.
Oh, I loved it. I thought it was wonderful. Even though I cried, I don't always cry because it's sad.
Right. It crying can be from uplifting and touched and all sorts of
Yeah.
wonderful.
And also you have a really wonderful use of words. Some of your phrases are worthy of putting on cards.
Yeah,
Super
thank you. Well, I'll make memes out of them and put them on Facebook.
duper. Well, thank you so much, Anne Crawford, for being a paradigm shifter on many dimensions and even in many centuries. I appreciate it very much.
Thank you. It was such a pleasure and such an honor.
And for me. And thank you for listening to Paradigm Shifters. And this is Veronica Entwistle saying, be in touch. VeronicaEntwistle.com. Talk to you soon.